Hey, welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is your host, Cyrus Alderwood. And I don't want to scare you. I know you're probably sitting around a campfire listening to this, but we need to have a talk about Jason. Yeah, you know Jason, Friday the 13th. So tonight we are going to be talking about everything Friday the 13th, and we have a really special guest. So we'll be right back in one moment, and we're going to talk with Amy Cody. Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, that is the intro music to the original Friday the 13th movie. No, I do not have the rights to that. Thank you for asking. But we do have a very special guest tonight. We're going to talk about all things Friday the 13th. We have executive producer and actress Amy Lee Cody from an upcoming independent film called Crystal Lake. Amy, how you doing tonight?
I am so good. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm excited. Anything Friday the 13th always grabs my attention. I'm excited to see the trailer that you guys are about to release and learn a little bit about the process.
We actually just released it yesterday.
Okay, so it's out now. Okay, so I must have missed that yesterday.
Yes, and I will actually send you the link to that.
Excellent. I'll put that up on our Facebook page on the Gonzo Chronicles as well. But you have been you're executive producer and an actress and star in the upcoming film. Let's kind of back up a little bit and just – all things Friday the 13th, what got you to love this movie in the first place?
Well, I want to say that I was like 7 when I watched the first Friday the 13th. And I knew once I got older, I knew when I love Jason's story. I love Jason Voorhees. I love his mom, Pamela. I love the story. The whole story just captured me. I've stayed there my entire life. I've never left the 80s. I told myself when I was 7, I will do a Camp Crystal Lake movie when I'm older. I knew at that point I wanted to be an actress.
Wow, that's pretty early in life.
Here I am doing a damn Jason Voorhees film. I'm so excited.
Now, when you initially wanted to start doing this, how long ago did you start this project?
I want to say maybe a month and a half ago.
So this is relatively brand new, and you've already got the trailer out.
It's brand new. We're kicking ass. I have the director, Stephen Bastian. He's incredible. Big shout out to him. He's doing everything, finding locations. He's filming this. He's directing everybody. We have Dalton Stout. He's a cinematographer. He is incredible. Cody Huskins. He plays Jason. I mean, you've never seen a better Jason cosplayer than Cody Huskins. He's incredible.
How did you meet the crew and I guess the actors on the set?
So I met Dalton through Steven, and him and Cody live in Tennessee. They came down from Tennessee to do the teaser trailer last Tuesday. And so just from last Tuesday to yesterday, we have the trailer done.
How long did it take you to get the crew together?
And Cody and Dalton are really good friends. So they live about 5 minutes apart in Tennessee. So they came down here and I asked Cody and he was like, yeah, I would be, you know, honored to play Jason Voorhees. He has every Jason costume in every movie.
So you got everybody, and you're filming in, you said, near Wilmington, North Carolina, somewhere in that general area. What was, so far, what's the filming process been like? How challenging has it been, especially since you're, you know, independent filmmakers and different parts of the country getting people together to do this?
Actually, I hate to jinx it, but it's been going so well. Everybody that is on board, knowing that it's an independent film, has just been so incredible. Especially the people, most of them are coming from out of town, and everybody's already a family, you know what I mean? So when we shot the teaser, there was about, I don't know, 5 or 6 people there, and it just went so smoothly, like, you know, you were on a Hollywood set. I mean, that's how good it went. And we got four scenes done in less than 3 hours.
Wow.
That's unheard of, you know? It's incredible. Everybody's working so well, and I can't wait to start filming in June and meet the entire cast.
So I know you got the teaser trailer out. Without giving too much away, tell us a little bit about what this movie is going to be about.
So without giving any spoilers away, basically I'm a co-writer on this film, me and Steven Bastian. He's the writer, I'm the co-writer. He wrote this film, I'm not kidding, in less than an hour. And it is like a mini feature film in like a 27-minute short film. It is like absolutely unheard of what he's done with this film. So basically everybody's at the campfire, you know, it's just a mini Crystal Lake. It's just a mini Friday 13th in an independent film. Everybody's best friends. They don't believe Jason's real. You know what I mean? It's just until that very night, and a lot of bad shit happens. A lot of bad shit. And so much shit, you're not going to believe that this is an independent film.
So one of the things I wanted to kind of bring up is, you know, I dropped you an email earlier, and I brought up this really interesting question that – that I've kind of talked to other independent filmmakers and people who support indie films. It seems like in Hollywood right now, everything is so manufactured, and I don't say fake. I mean, we're talking Hollywood. I know fake, but if it's not like, you know, a big blockbuster film, like, you know, an Iron Man or, you know, one of those Marvel shows or one of these big blockbuster superhero right. things or a kids movie, it seems like there's a lot of, it lacks a lot of creativity these days. And from my opinion, we're seeing a lot more creativity from the folks in the independent film ranks. But the only disconnect is they don't have the funding that Hollywood does. And I don't know why the two don't marry, you know, because there's so much creativity on that independent side. What are your thoughts on that? And how difficult has funding been?
Funding, so, you know, speaking of funding, we have a fundraiser out with a lot of cool perks, and it's really hard for independent films because a lot of bigger people don't take them seriously, when in reality, independent short films is like the future, because like you said, Hollywood is dying at this point, and you're going to see at this point, I have seen since starting this film, probably 20 to 30 independent Friday 13th films. And I've seen a few of them on YouTube that are badass, you know, like they're going to take over. They're going to take over because Hollywood is, first of all, a piece of shit. I'm sorry, but, the actors are shit, and not all of them. There's a lot of good ones, but you know, you put, I think, more into an independent film because you're trying so hard to make it and you want everybody to love it. And, you know, even if you're putting up your own money, which, you know, we have a little bit, and you want it that bad, and you want it to be taken seriously, but it doesn't apparently match Hollywood films, unfortunately. But I think in the future, it's just going to take over. It's going to take over, and I think Hollywood's just going to fall off the planet, and, you know, here come us. You know, we're on the way.
Yeah, even George Lucas and Spielberg have kind of warned about what's happening in Hollywood because everybody's going to the streaming services. I mean, I watch Disney Plus, I watch Netflix. There's a couple other streaming services out there I don't have, but yeah, but it seems like when they have the award shows that no one really watches anymore either, that they have you have so many from Netflix that get nominated. And they never get any love at the award shows. They get nominated, but they don't win anything. It seems like they're trying to keep their own niche. They'll pay lip service to it, but they don't win anything. Are you going to be putting this film in any kind of a regional film fest or anything like that coming up?
So Steven, the director, and I have talked about doing so because this independent film that we're doing, Crystal Lake, is going to blow so many of them out of the water because we have such incredible crew. We have extreme professionals working on this film, the cast, everyone. We have a voiceover artist, and we have Steven, and we have Dalton, and all these people are very big professionals that are going to make it into something other than just let's run in the woods and be, you know, slaughtered by Jason Voorhees, even though I'm fine. Like that's my dream. I would love to be killed by him. You know, this is why I'm doing it. I'm excited, you know, but it's just going to get big. It's just going to blow up because of all the talent we have behind this film.
Now I wanted to ask you a question. Your character, Lori, was she based on a certain Friday the 13th character from the franchise?
No.
So this is just organic, brand new.
I just love the name Lori. It honestly, I love Lori Strode in the Michael Myers films. So I was like, well, what about Lori? You know what I mean? What about Lori? Lori's a good name. And so in my mind, I was like, that kind of came out of thought about Lori Strode for 5 seconds. You know what I mean? And I was like, but my last name isn't Strode, but it is Lori. And I love, because I love, you know, I'm a fan of all the 80s horrors, which, you know, Michael Myers is one of them. That's where it came from.
So, yeah. So the first Friday the 13th that you watched was the original.
Uh-huh.
Now, out of all of those, did you have a favorite Friday the 13th girl? Any of the survivors?
So I loved Tina and New Blood, Friday the 13th.
Right.
I loved her character. I loved how she moved shit with her mind, and she honestly kicked Jason's ass the most of the time at the end, you know? And she was incredible, and she's in Roseblood, the independent film, and she just, I watched the trailer, she's just incredible. She's an incredible actress, and she's, so by far in the Friday the 13th, movies, she has to be my favorite survivor. Yeah.
Now, making an independent film, I mean, we all have our daily lives and our day jobs and things like that. And you having a family, how hard is it to kind of balance what you're doing as executive producer and kind of one of the spearheads of the project, with the filming and the planning and all that? How difficult has that been?
Honestly, like I said, my kids are horror freaks. They're like me, and they're just like cheering me on the entire time, and like balancing it. Yeah, it's a little difficult, but we do, like, we filmed, you know, we made sure everybody's schedule was open to do the teaser, and when we do the actual film, it'll be on the weekend, so my kids will be taken care of, and it just really hasn't been that difficult. So it just makes me feel like it's just filming is going to be just as smooth, at least I hope so. But everything's been, so far, you know, not hard to balance at all.
Okay. Yeah, I know with so much going on with COVID and, you know, all this, that's kind of kept people from working, from filming. And I think for like a year, a lot of things just paused. Mm-hmm. Other than this particular film, when did you decide to get into acting? When did you kind of take your first step into this?
I was in my early 20s, maybe middle 20s. I've wanted to do it since I was 5, but, you know, you grow up, you start a family, you just kind of put that on pause, I guess you can say. And I wish I'd never done that. Not that I don't wish I started a family. That's not what I mean. What I mean is I wish I would have started acting a lot earlier, because I'm 35 now. But I've been on a few sets, and I loved them, but nothing like this. Nothing. And even just doing the teaser trailer, I kept telling my friend Angel, she's the SFX artist. She did my blood and all my pictures and filming and stuff. She's incredible. I love her. And I told her, I was like, this is my home. Like, this feels right. Like, I've always been nervous to be on sets. Like, I'm not going to remember my lines. I'm shaky. My heart's pounding. But as soon as I started, as soon as I was in that chokehold and he was choking me out, you know, like killing me, I was like, it gave me life. It was just weird. Like, he's trying to kill me in this scene, but I felt so alive. I've never felt so alive.
Yeah. We all have moments where we kind of relate to things like that. It has to be exhilarating. I know when I first finish a rough draft of a book, when I get to the very end, it's like the end, you know, I'm not done by any stretch of the imagination, but just getting that whole thing done, it's exhilarating. I have to go outside and have a cigar. I always do that for like a little celebration. That and a glass of scotch, and that's my celebration. But, you know, with this film, like, how is this different from what you've done on other sets? Because, I mean, this is probably a dumb assumption, but from your pictures, I assume you're sticking with the horror genre.
So I've done some comedies in the past. I've been on a few of those sets, and I've done a lot of extra work on One Tree Hill in Wilmington. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but that was a huge show.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved working with everybody that I worked with, but I just didn't feel it. I wasn't all the way there. like I said, we're doing anthology. So we're after this one, we're doing Freddy, we're doing Michael, we're doing Leatherface, we're doing all the killers.
So you're hitting the heavyweights after. So this is just the first of many on the classic.
This is number one, baby. Number one. We are going to continue to grow and to grow. So I just feel. This is where I will do any kind of film, but horror is where I'm comfortable. It's where I want to be.
Yeah, because I've seen some of the photos that you put up on social media. Before we go any further into this, what are your coordinates? Where can people find you on social media if they want to look you up while they're listening to this?
So I have an Instagram. It's Amy Lee Cody on my Instagram, and then it's the same on Facebook. I have a TikTok. It's Amy Cody 1, and that's my TikTok. Anybody listening, more than welcome to follow me and, you know, just stay up to date with the progress because we're going to have a lot of it.
And just so those that are listening, Cody is spelled C-O-T-Y, right? C-O-T-E.
No, nobody. My last name is horrible. I think we discussed this earlier. I cannot. My last name is just not good. It's not good at all. I'm sorry.
That's four letters. It should be easy, right? Not that I butcher that up, but no. It's so if people want to like look that up, I've contacted you through Facebook, and I know you share a lot of the same stuff on Facebook that you do on Instagram. So that's really good to kind of get get those updates that you post quite often on the film. When is the next schedule that you guys are getting together to film on this?
So we're getting together June 12th and 13th, but we're doing our table read at the end of this month. Everybody's going to get together, you know, get our lines down, and after that, it's a couple weeks later, it's filming time.
That's pretty exciting. How long do you think it'll take before you finish from start to finish and then get the editing and then make it available?
That's a hard question. Well, the teaser got done pretty quick, but that was only four scenes. We have a lot more scenes to do in the film. So I would give it, I want to say our release date. We're probably not going to release it until October. We want to like shoot for Halloween. The release date is something that's just stay tuned because we're not exactly sure yet.
Okay. So as we go, I'm kind of learning a little bit about independent film. There's so much work that goes into it from those that I've talked to that have worked on independent films and directed them. But at the same time, there's so much in the business side of it. And so I'm kind of learning a little bit about that. And I wanted to ask a couple of questions on that side. And if you're not comfortable answering, you don't want to, if you need to keep that quiet, then I understand that. But with the funding of this, how hard is it to get started with? I mean, do you get a certain amount of funding and then start and then go back and get more funding? Or is this something you're trying to get everything up front so you can do start to finish without going back?
So we have some money raised, but we're diving in deep. And like I said, whatever we raise is great. Anybody that can donate, the link is on my page, and I will make sure I give it to you again before we are done here. But even if I'll put my own money into it, I don't really care. I know, like I said, we've raised a little bit, and anything's better than nothing. And like I said, if you cannot donate, that's fine. Sharing is caring. That's what I tell my kids. That's what, if you want to share, that's just as good, but we're trying to raise what we can before we start filming, but we're going to film anyways. And then whatever we raise, is whatever we raise after that.
Yeah. And people can't expect other people to work for free or entertain people for free. And that's kind of one of my biggest concerns when it comes to indie films is that you have so much creativity out there and such lack of funding across the board for all films. Once you finish this, you get this on DVD or however you do it, is this something that's going to be for sale, people can buy? Or are you looking to put this out on the web and then have it paid for by sponsors that maybe come in ads?
We're trying to get on Amazon Prime is what we're aiming to do. And it's all going to be all over YouTube. I'm not really sure how the film is going to be released. I know Amazon Prime is probably going to be the main way of watching it. But that's still being discussed with, you know, still being in the beginning stages of this film.
Now, how stoked is the entire cast when it comes to Friday the 13th? Were they all such huge Friday the 13th fans, even all the actors? Or is it just something that they thought would be cool and maybe looking forward to the Nightmare on Elm Street or the Halloween film that you do next?
Well, I don't think anybody is as much of a fan as I am. I'm sick. I think that I'm sick. I think that I'm a little too obsessed, and, you know, we'll talk about that later. But everybody is a fan of Friday the 13th. Everybody knows what it is. Like I said, probably not as much as I do. But, you know, we have some that are more wanting, they're ready for Michael Myers. You know, we're going to keep the same cast, just different characters. Everybody's going to be in the same movies, just it'll be just different characters, you know?
Okay, yeah. I'm trying to think of the series that's on TV that does the same thing. Same actors, but different characters from season to season. American Horror Story.
Probably is it American Horror Story?
Yeah. That's the one I'm thinking.
What a great show, man.
It really was. I mean, I haven't been able to, like, catch all of them, but I really did like the one where they kind of went back and did the slasher, 80s slasher film.
Oh, 1984?
Yeah,
oh,
that was...
God. Yes, and see, that, it just looks like Friday the 13th, and as soon as I see it, I'm just like, oh my God, Jason Voorhees, you know?
Yeah, they made it really cool. So people, just to get this out here, so people that want to donate or interested in donating, they can check your page out. They can check out the Gonzo Chronicles Facebook page, which is facebook.com/GonzoBarryDick. That's a character that I created in one of my books, in a series of books. So you can go there, and I'll have the link there. And they can click on the trailer to kind of, if they want to see what the quality of work is before they, like, you know, throw out $50 or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I definitely wouldn't expect anybody to, you know, buy a car without riding it first, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that's probably the hardest part when you're starting out, trying to get money to do these things, and you don't have a product yet to show. So you really have to sell an idea.
It is really difficult. I try to promote, as you can see on my Facebook page. I ever since this came out of my head wanting to do this, I try to promote Crystal Lake all the time as much as I can, because it's all about promotion. It's all about getting it out there and getting people to see what you have and getting people to get, we need excitement. We need, like I said, there's a lot of independent films going out right now. And a lot of them are Friday the 13th. From Jason is just in high demand as far as independent films.
Yeah.
He's number one. He's always number one. It's more than any killer. But we're not in competition with anybody. You know, I'm happy. I know almost the entire cast on Rosewood. They're all very sweet people. And like I said, I see Laura Park Lincoln. She's wanting to play Tina in the New Blood, and she's incredible. I comment on all of her stuff, and she's, you know, it's not a competition. It's fun, you know, and we want to be known as, like, the next independent scream queens. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're the screen, like, everybody, oh my God, we know who these people are. Oh my God, they're coming out with a new film. I can't wait to see it, you know?
Yeah, I wonder what, like, you know, the actresses that were in the originals, like Deborah Sue Voorhees or Melanie Kinneman from part, those are two from part five. I wonder what they think about all the, I mean, it's got to be flattering to see such a resurgence of this coming back after all these years.
I'm even blown away myself, and I wasn't even on the Friday the 13th movies. You know, I can't imagine being everyone who's been involved in the actual films in the 80s, like the people you just mentioned, and you know, Kane Hodder and all the people who play Jason Voorhees. You know what I mean? It just must be so, like, wow. My character, everybody wants to bring to life. This film is so, it's still, even after the 80s, I mean, we're in 2021, you know, everybody wants to go back to the 80s, because let's be honest, that's where the shit's at. That, who doesn't want to be in the 80s?
I mean, it was a very different time culturally, a lot more fun, and I think the last 15 years have probably not been the most fun culturally in America. It's very divided, no. and you know, I'll not get all that soapbox, because I'll bitch for 30 minutes, but
I will bitch right behind you for 30 more minutes.
It's there's so much, but you know, that's the thing about independent films. It's not like, you know, they see all the issues in Hollywood and they're like, F that, we're not going to deal with that. We're just going to move forward. We're going to start a new thing. And I really love that spunk and attitude to like, you know, F that, we're going to be trendsetters. You know, we're going to go kick ass in our own way. We don't have $50 million for a budget, but damn it, we're going to take, you know, $30,000 and do the best we can.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, come hell or high water, we are making these films. And we, like I said, we got the best cast and crew behind them. And what more can you ask for? And we're not following Hollywood's rules. We're not going by their standards. Like I'm saying, here's in the years to come, what's going to be Hollywood? You know, it's going to be independent films like Halloween 1978 that was independent. That movie was made in less than a month. No one wanted Halloween. And now look at it. It is still exploding after all these years. They will not stop making Halloween. I don't care what they say, oh, Halloween Ends or Kills or whatever. We know it's not done.
And, you know, flattery, imitation is the best form of flattery. And you, I'm sure you'll agree, like, I don't know how many movies I've seen in the horror genre that either tried to, and I don't say they steal things, but when you watch it, you get that vibe from Friday the 13th or Halloween or Alien, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Exorcist. How many of those movies have come out, like The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2, and now there's going to be a Conjuring 3? And I would like to, I mean, even though that they say those are true stories based off of what the Warrens had investigated as paranormal investigators, man, that traces all the way back to The Exorcist. Every damn bit of that. And so the filming of it, I mean, you're telling a story is one thing. Filming it, you're telling a story in, I guess, a different way of, you know, in a visual way versus a, you know, reading a book and seeing a movie. That's why some people say the book's always better, or the movie was better, or whatever. Depends on how you see the lens you see the world through. And there's so much that I think that lean on these movies that may not be related at all whatsoever. But the core of those go back to a lot of those they called slasher films in the 80s. And that was probably the last great era in horror. Not that horror is ever a bad era, but it was really the last heyday era. And it'll come back. It's starting to come back. It's just back in the indie circle.
I mean, look at the 80s. Look at all the clothes. I mean, all the clothes, the high-waisted, everything's coming. The crop tops started in the 70s and the 80s. And history repeats itself. It's just, that's just human nature. It's going to happen. And everyone knows that are doing these independent films, especially the Friday the 13th. They know that, you know, and that's why I think that's why they're doing it. And it's just going to be forced in. And whether you like it or not, it's coming. And we're part of that train.
Yeah.
And we're excited.
Even the fads, like even fashion to some degree. However, if you do see me walking around with Billy Idol spiked hair and a rat tail, you do have permission to beat my ass.
I probably just laugh.
Throw that out there.
If I see some flock of seagull shit coming from your head, I'm telling you, I'm just going to laugh. Like, that's just what's going to happen.
I get ridiculed on Twitter at that point. That's great. That'd be awesome. Yeah, no flock of seagulls for me. Obviously, I don't have that much hair. I shave my head, actually.
Okay.
I grow it out.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, if I had enough hair, I would probably puff it out like, you know, the girls did in the 80s.
If I can't have a big, beautiful blonde afro, what's the point? That's just the way I look at it. No, I'm totally kidding.
You know, I mean, let's bring the mullets back. Like, where's the mullets?
Well, where I live, you can find them everywhere. I just go sit at Walmart and count mullets. That's what I do on a day when I'm bored.
Oh, my God.
So let's
sit at Walmart and count mullets. That is hilarious.
Oh, man, that's a hobby around here. Now, one of the first memories I have of, like, Friday the 13th was from part two. And it was the guy in the wheelchair. Any other time I would remember all these characters' names. I'm drawing a blank right now. The guy in the wheelchair goes outside to see what the noise was, and he catches that machete right in the head. And then you remember that scene where the wheelchair goes bouncing down the stairs, and it stops and, like, it just pauses. And I'm waiting for the big crash at the bottom. And, of course, I'm like, damn it, I'm not going to get that. Like, I don't know why. I just got a machete to the head, but yet I want to see this guy hit the bottom too. It's like, then I kind of felt bad about that. But I mean, everybody remembers certain kills from Friday the 13th. Do you have any that pop into your mind?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the 2009 reboot.
Yes.
But it was really good. I it wasn't my favorite, but I enjoyed the kills in that movie. I liked the part where the you know, he does his bow and arrow, which is like, I don't know if he took a class for that because, I mean, he hits every time, you know, but he's Jason Voorhees, is going to. But he shoots that bow and arrow, the guy in the bow, and it goes right through his head and his eyeball, I believe. And then, you know, the girl's in the water and he goes and she hides right under the little pier deck thing. And he sticks it and he just pulls her right up and you're just like, well, she's dead as hell.
Oh, yeah, the machete right through the little crack in the wood, right into the top of her skull. I remember
right
that.
Right, you know you're dying. You know, like, you can't get, and that one, he ran like a son of a bitch. Like, he ran so fast.
I know.
How do you wear that? Like, you know your costume is so heavy. Like, oh, my God, it's just, wow, I'm just amazed.
Yeah, I wonder if they put a piled a bunch of stuff up and put, like, Usain Bolt under there to haul ass through the woods. But that was one of the big differences. I've never been a big fan of reboots, but that movie actually I thought was really good and really well made. But I always kind of – it kind of answered a question in a way for me, because in the originals, everybody's running their ass off, just sprinting through the woods, tripping over their own shoestrings or whatever. And yet when they turn around, this guy who's just taking a stroll is like right upon them. Like, how the hell does he catch them? He never runs in the originals. But then we find out in the reboot that there are tunnels. And maybe that's how he got around in the original. Well, but you never know that in the originals.
There was another kill. I'm not exactly – if I had my son in here, because he's a Friday the 13th. He knows every single one of them. But it was the guy – he was in the porta potty or something. And he was
yes.
You know, like he was like – he had stomach ache or something from eating some shit from Taco Bell or something.
Yeah, it was part five.
I don't burn or something.
Yeah, it was.
And he was like freaking out and singing, and he was just, and then he gets killed. That was probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, his girlfriend was on the outside. They were singing back and forth, and she was quiet, and he was wondering why. Yeah, that was part five, actually.
Part five. Yeah, that was a good kill. I liked that one.
Yeah, and part five. The crazy thing is, it wasn't even Jason Voorhees. It was paramedic guy worked with the ambulance who was mimicking Jason Voorhees. That was kind of like the reboot of the whole. Kind of kicked the series back off, and it got back into some really good stuff after that, too. I was actually surprised how well the series did after part four, and you thought it was going to be over, and then they come out with part five, and then you're like, oh, that wasn't even Jason, but then part six, you're going to see Jason come back to life, and how Tommy from part four actually brought this guy back to life.
I loved that one. I love Tommy. I think he was a good actor. Just the whole movie was... That's probably one of the ones I watched most of is that one. And it's just, it was put together. And for me, in the 80s, even though we didn't have the things we have today as far as equipment and, you know, what they use on sets, even independent films, they didn't have that in the 80s. You know what I mean? They did, they worked with what they had, like a fucking camera, you know, and sound and stuff, but it wasn't high tech like we have today, you know? I still feel like the filming was better back then. You know, if that makes any sense, it was better to me, and it's still better to me. And that's what we're trying to do with this film. It's going to be placed in 1987. So it's going to look like the 80s, you know, and it's just, that's what I wanted, and that's what we're doing. And, you know, it's just going to be badass, and everybody's just going to be blown away from it.
I know a lot of people say CGI was such a great thing, a breakthrough in film. And I guess for some movies it probably is. But when you look at the horror genre and people try to use CGI and these other types of, video techniques, it falls way short of what those artists, those true artists back in the day, because it had to look real, because whoever was carrying it, you know, I mean, on their back, whatever the mask was, whatever the clothes were, whatever the wound was, I mean, it had to look real. And was it, what's his name, Savini? One of the guys who did all the special effects for a lot of those.
Yes.
That guy is incredible.
And see, that's my point. They had to try harder back then because they didn't have. Now it sometimes it just looks too fake. You're like everything in the world is just like more material and just not as, you know, normal and real like it was back then, because they didn't have what we have today. So back then they just had to try a lot harder, and it just looked better to me. It just looked just more authentic and just good.
Now, with your independent film, is the work that you're doing there capturing that original feel of those looks?
Oh yes.
But where do you find an artist good enough these days to pull that off without going back to like somebody like Tom Savini or some of these old, what they call masters of this craft?
And without giving away too many things, like I said, Angel, she's an SFX artist, and she's incredible. And I've seen a lot of things that she has done. She did My Blood, and I mean, just the way the blood looked was I look like I had a wound on the top of my head when I did the teaser. You know, she's incredible. And you'll see. You'll just see how good everybody is on this. It's just going to – you're going to feel like you're back in the 80s. And that's what we wanted. We didn't want just, you know, running in the woods, which is fine. You know, a lot of people do it, and you get a lot of views, and you get a lot of following, which is great. But we wanted more the 80s feel, and we have a lot of props and a lot of things that are going into this film, just even just for being just an independent short film, that are going to be – you're going to be like, ooh, God, I just got an 80s feel, you know, like that. It's just little things, little details, you know what I mean? And, you know, you're just going to be blown away, and I can't wait for everybody to see it.
Okay, a couple of questions. Let's get to the real hard stuff. I know people are waiting on these answers.
Don't ask me math.
2 + 2. No, all right. Jason versus Freddy. Come on, man. Who won that fight?
It was Jason. Jason.
Freddy's a shit talker. I do like that. That's
he
one thing.
He walked out of the water with Freddy's head. I mean.
That's true.
You know, yeah, Freddy was alive, but he's already dead. He's dead. You know, like, Jason's dead. Like, they're dead, but he Freddy's smaller, so, like, he can move, I think, a little bit quicker, but Jason's stronger. Jason's always going to be stronger. I mean, the bastard's, like, 6'5", you know what I mean? And so I don't think really anybody besides maybe Leatherface could beat Jason.
Yeah, you'd have to hack off all the limbs.
Take him apart.
You know, like that scene from Monty Python and Search for the Holy Grail. It was just a flesh wound. The guy sitting there with no limbs. Nothing but a stump. Just a flesh wound. But that's Jason.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, yeah, just take him apart. That's the only way you can beat him. And throw him in a wood chipper and call it a day. That's right. It.
Michael Myers versus Jason Voorhees.
Who would win?
Yeah.
Jason. I'm sorry, Jason. And I love Michael. I'm not betraying Michael. I love him so much. But I think Jason's just stronger.
Hey, speaking of like Michael Myers, I'll get off the Friday 13th here just for a second. But Rob Zombie redid those Halloween movies. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on those movies, I guess, compared to the originals? Did you like them?
I'm a fan of Rob Zombie. I do like Rob Zombie. I love House of a Thousand Corpses. I love a lot of his films. But they completely went off track of the original and made it more of a paranormal and satanic kind of thing, you know, with all the upside down crosses and
yes.
Just everything. It was more comical to me, but it wasn't bad. It just, cause I'm a huge Halloween freak as far as those movies go. So I was just kind of like, what the hell is this? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Why'd they make this more satanic than just anything?
Yeah, because it didn't call for that, you know. I mean, it just wasn't. But everyone I asked that's in the business always kind of tell me the same thing. It's like they were sorely disappointed in the storyline of the film. Not that he's a bad filmmaker; he's a great filmmaker.
No. I mean, like I said, I'm a Rob Zombie fan. I think he's great. I think he's a good director. I think he's a good writer and all of that. But he just went off of it. And when you screw with the 80s and those films back in the day. You stay on storyline, you stay on topic, you don't go off of it and make it more demented than it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it was demented, to say the least. Now, same thing with the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot. What did you think of it? No?
I liked it. I think the actor was, I think he sounded like Kevin Bacon, so I couldn't get into it. I think it was actually just let my daughter watch it the other day. She's the one that turns 16 tomorrow. She actually really liked it, but she's never seen a lot of the Freddy movies, so she can't really compare. See, we can. And I don't really know. I think he did good. I just, unless it's Robert Englund, I just don't care.
Yeah. I mean, those are like, that was asking way too much of any actor to come in and fill the shoes of Robert Englund in that character.
And the sad thing is that poor actor, he got a lot of heat, a lot of shit from people because they were like, who do you think you are? Like, he was just an actor going in for a role. You know, he was doing his job.
And he did what they asked. And not that he's a bad actor. It's just, I thought as far as the storyline, the movie was okay. I'll watch it once in a while if there's nothing else on. But I thought the storyline, the original, there were secrets about Freddy you didn't know. And it's almost like from the very beginning, they gave everything about Freddy away, and at that point, it's just about how you're going to get these people together and kill them. And there wasn't a story to develop.
I just don't like the fact that they really pushed how he assaulted children, which we knew Freddy already did, but it was more in this one was, you know, sexually assault. And they really dwelled on that. They really stuck to that, which you figure, but Freddy Krueger was a child murderer. They didn't dwell on the fact that whether he was that person or not, but they did in this film.
Yeah, and I thought it kind of ruined the storyline to a degree, because you don't have to hammer that home. That is such an egregious act. You only have to allude to it to make it powerful.
It's like, you know, doing nudity in a film. You know, if you don't want to actually see nudity, you imply it.
Yeah.
You move on. You don't have to see it. So why dwell on the fact that this is what he was doing in this movie?
Sometimes less is a lot more. And I thought that was one of those stories where it wasn't really any fault of the people making the film. It was probably on the side of the director and the writers that really dropped the ball. Because there was a lot of promise in that movie that could have been a huge hit. But I don't know. That's just my beef about it. All right, here's the other big question, Amy. What are your top five Friday the 13th films? If you had to rank them in order from favorite to, you know, top five or top three, whichever's easier.
Can I just say all of them?
Oh, it's cheating. All right, come on.
I know. Okay, so I love the first one. I'll tell you, because we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know who Jason Voorhees was. I love Pamela Voorhees. I love that twist on that. I love the fact that his mom was the original killer. And I love the fact that she's in his head a lot in that film, and not in that film, but the rest of the films. So number one has to be my first favorite, obviously, but, oh man, you had to ask me that.
While you're thinking there, I'm just going to make this point about the first one with Betsy Palmer. Just that storyline and the way they told that story and delivered it. She really, I mean, that was the only one she was in. But in reality, like that story was so powerful and her character was so powerful, she stars in all of them going forward without even being there,
just her voice. Her voice is so chilling. My son plays, I don't know if you, so he has the Friday the 13th game on the Xbox, and when he plays it as Jason, not a camp counselor, when he plays it and you hear his mom's voice every time he kills somebody, and she's like, kill for mother, or she's like, look what they did to us, Jason, look what they did to us, they have to pay. And just her voice is so chilling, and that's her voice.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It's, oh my god, it gives me chills. It's incredible. And so, like you said, she's in the, even the 2009 reboot, she has a very powerful impact on every one of these films.
Yeah, and her as an actress, because you can't think of Jason's mom without seeing her face in your head. And even as an actress, she looms all these years later, even after she's gone, just as Jason's mom. It's, you know, that I don't know. You're not going to find, you're hard pressed to find a more powerful character in a movie that's not even in a movie. You know,
and that's what I'm saying. That's how powerful Friday the 13th franchise is. It's, you know, just the story, his story, just that's what captures me more as far as serial killers is. And any franchise, more than any of them, is his story. And then when I was younger, I fell in love with his story. And it, as sick as it is, I fell in love with Jason Voorhees. I was just like, oh my god. I actually looked up to him, as weird as that is. And I know I'm not the only one out there. So I followed him, and I always watched his movies. And I raised my son the same way. And, you know, as wrong as some people might think that is, he loves it. He has every Jason Voorhees figure in his closet. He has every Michael Myers figure, every Freddy figure, every Leatherface figure, every one of them.
That's awesome.
And so I was raised that way, so I raised my son that way. And if it had any negative impact on him, I would have never let. But he loves it. He's like, what do you want to watch? He's like, Friday 13th. I'm like, that's my boy. That's good.
Yeah, let's what's on horror tonight? All right, so number one, first movie would be your favorite. What comes in second?
Yeah, I'm not going to answer that because I really can't. It would just have to be the first five. Does that work for you?
Oh, that whatever. I mean, there's so many that have so many good scenes and memorable things in them. Like the New Blood you mentioned, part six was just incredible.
I loved it. It's her character. She stuck with me. She really stuck with me. And I'm so excited to see her in another in a fan film with Jason Voorhees. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's exciting. I don't see any other genre in my life. That's what I see is horror. If I'm at home and my kids are gone or something, I'm like, okay, you know, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, or Jason Voorhees, you know, one of them, I'm putting something on as far as the 80s go.
Yeah. Now, I've done a podcast on here before with horror fans that we've talked about our top 10 favorite horror movies that everybody has to watch. And sometimes we'll go off the beaten path of things that most people may not have seen. But if I had to rank my top three Fridays, I would do probably part one, part four. This is the one with Corey Feldman when he kills Jason, supposedly.
I mean, the performance that boy put on.
Yeah.
The performance. And then when his head was shaved and he's like, and his sister screaming, Tommy, don't.
Yeah.
You can't get away from having chills. It's just, I got them right now, and I've seen it a million times.
Crazy. I would do probably 1, 4, and 6, The New Blood. Probably in that, and probably you'd have to in that order, too, because it's hard to take them out of order sometimes. Because, I mean,
I love part 7 as well, because I love the way Jason's mask is. I love how built, I love seeing, like, the rib cage, the back muscles. I just love the, you know, everything. And that's probably... Yeah. The reason I love Part 7 the most was because I just loved his costume.
Yeah, his costumes had really evolved a lot through each movie. They just got cooler and cooler. But I do know some people that were lucky enough to meet Kane Hodder at festivals.
I met him 2 years ago at a horror fest.
Yeah, people say he's like probably one of the nicest cats you'll run into.
He gave me everything for free. Everybody else, he was like charging. He was like, hey, you want a picture? Here's a picture. I sat on his lap, took a picture. He choked me out. I will send you his pictures if you want to put them on your page. He just was choking me out like he was really killing me. And he's the thing about Kane is that he never left his role as Jason Voorhees. He walks the same exact. I mean, he walks like his hands are like, you know, in a ball, like a fist. And he physically still believes, I think, that he's Jason Voorhees. And he even told me that he would love to portray Jason again, but he just don't think that they're going to, because, you know, he's getting older.
Yeah. And it's tough for people to recreate that. Probably with Robert Englund, if they ever called him back for another Nightmare, he might do a cameo. I talked about, when we talked about the remake, this was really interesting. The guy who played Freddy in the remake, he actually went and tried out for the part of Jesse in part two. And he was turned down. All right, so he didn't get. So he was heartbroken. He was much younger then. And then who knew all those years later when he goes back in for the remake to try out for whatever role that they would end up giving him Freddy. That's a true story. It was so kind of, you know, it comes back around, you know. People, I guess, see the perseverance. And that's what you see a lot of in independent film, is a lot of perseverance, a lot of hope, and a lot of optimism, and a ton of creativity. So I hope this project goes off with a bang.
Yeah, in independent film, you try so hard because you're not, you don't have $100 or $500 million budget, you know? So, and a lot of people, like the bigger people, don't take them seriously. But you try, I think, really hard in independent films because you want to be seen and you want to be noticed. And you're going to throw everything you have. Not that they don't on Hollywood sets, but independent films, you bust ass. And even just doing the teaser, I physically jumped in so many bushes and got cut and just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. Didn't care. I was exhausted and everybody was tired, but you know, it's an independent film. So you're trying harder, I think, to make it what it's going to be. So people are like, oh my God, like, I can't believe that this is an independent film. Like, how did you fit all of this in this 27, 28 minute film? You know?
Well, I can't wait to see this. And I hope this has huge success for you guys.
Thank you.
That the independent films are probably important. I always tell people on the podcast, if they like to buy books, to support a lot of independent writers. Because, you know, not many of us are Stephen King or Dean Koontz and can just walk into a place and get a book deal. Same thing with independent filmmakers. You're very important to, I guess, defining the culture now and going forward in a way, regardless of the what kind of film, but just like that kind of creativity and that kind of energy is really, it's good to see it. So congratulations on what you guys have done so far. I can't wait to. I'm gonna go watch the trailer. Make sure you share it with me. I'll put that up on the Gonzo Chronicles Facebook page as well. And hopefully you'll come back sometime as you get the project closer to completion, and we'll talk a little bit more. Maybe bring a cast member or two along, and we'll chat with them too, and kind of pick their brain on the process.
Oh, we'd love that. Thank you so much for having me. And, you know, just keep me posted. If you ever want me to come back, I can bring a couple cast members, like you said, and, you know, have a good time and talk more about as we progress in the film, what's going on. And, you know, that will be fun. I really enjoy it. This is my first podcast. I've never done one before, and it's been exciting.
Well, you'll probably get invited to a bunch with what you're doing. So I'm glad I got you on here first. Glad I was the first one. So
you were the first. So thank you.
Amy Lee Cody from Crystal Lake. Everybody make sure to go check out her on Instagram, on Facebook, and check out the GoFundMe page. And if you see the trailer, and see what you think, and make sure you help out independent artists of all stripes. So thanks everybody again for tuning into the Gonzo Chronicles. I'll be back soon with something else. We'll find out what kind of weirdness is on my mind next week. So thanks again, everybody. Take care, and I'll see you down the road.